Chapter 8. In sickness and in health, basic care for your dog. Just like small children, dogs completely depend on us for their general well-being, from grooming and dental care to exercise and diet. Also, always protecting and caring for your pet will help you bond with her more than anything. According to the American Veterinary Medical Association, there are certain things you should do to keep your dog healthy, including feeding her a balanced diet, helping her maintain a healthy weight, making sure she gets enough exercise, neutering or spaying her, doing what you can to keep her parasite-free, and taking her for annual vet visits to keep up with vaccinations and to detect any problems when they are most treatable. Your most important partner in keeping your dog healthy is your veterinarian, and I hope you chose one wisely using the guidelines I outlined in Chapter 2. While this chapter will give you an overview of general healthcare issues, please always work with your vet to determine what's best for your dog. Food, glorious food. Store-bought, homemade, vegetarian, gluten-free, grain-free, raw. Dogs have almost as many food options as humans do, and it can get really confusing determining what's healthy and what's not. Marketing tactics can get in the way, and if you ask other people their opinions, everyone is going to give you different advice. For the most part, it's a matter of personal preference. However, here are some things to consider. What kind? When I choose a dog food, I read the ingredient list, keeping in mind that ingredients are listed in order of quantity. I always avoid brands with inexpensive foods such as corn as the main ingredients, and any with questionable ingredients. Instead, I want the first ingredient to be a quality protein such as chicken or fish. In general, your selection should include a statement of nutritional adequacy that means the food is complete and balanced for your pet's particular life stage, according to the Association of American Feed Control Officials, AAFCO. It should also include a guaranteed analysis which lists the percentage of nutrients, and it must meet certain requirements, at least minimum percentages of crude protein and crude fat, and maximum percentages of crude fiber and moisture. Don't get fooled by sneaky marketing ploys. For instance, just as with human food, many terms such as whole foods or natural haven't been regulated, so they actually don't mean much when you see them emblazoned on a bag. Instead, work closely with your vet to find the best food based on your dog's age, size, activity level, and any particular health needs. Some people who work at pet supply stores are also particularly knowledgeable and may be able to help. Or check out dogfoodadvisor.com for complete reviews on many brands. Your vet can also help determine whether your dog would do better on dry food, wet food, or a combination of both. Also, if you're considering making your dog's food yourself, talk to your vet about what's right for your pet. Of course, your dog is going to have a say in the matter too, so you may have a little trial and error until you find one that she loves. How often? Puppies should eat 2 to 3 meals a day until they're around 6 months old. After that, you can feed your dog once or twice a day, depending on your dog's age, size, exercise, and eating habits. Some people free-feed their dogs by pouring the daily food allotment into the bowl in the morning and letting their pets graze throughout the day. However, I find that keeping a schedule is the best, especially when you're house training, as you can more easily predict when your dog will have to go outside and do her business. Also, in households with multiple dogs, scheduling is usually the only way to make sure that each dog is actually eating her own food. How much? In terms of how much to feed your dog, you can start with the general recommendations on the bag, but it will vary tremendously based on your dog's age, size, metabolism, and exercise habits. A dog competing in agility competitions is going to need more calories than a dog who is the same age, breed, and size, but a total couch potato. Talk to your vet about the ideal amount for your dog, and then watch your pet to make sure she remains a healthy weight. A good rule of thumb? You want to be able to feel her ribs, but you don't want to see them. If you notice your dog is getting too chunky, you can help her lose weight by limiting her portions, cutting back on treats, and increasing her exercise, all under the guidance of an expert, of course. Considering food allergies. Dogs can be allergic to a variety of foods. The most common offenders are beef, dairy, chicken, lamb, fish, eggs, corn, wheat, and soy. Of course, these allergies vary from dog to dog. Often, if a dog is allergic to one ingredient, she may be allergic to others. Also, she may eat a certain food for months, even years, and then suddenly develop an allergy to it. Symptoms of a food allergy include vomiting, diarrhea, itchy skin and rear end, ear inflammation, and hot spots, red, moist, hot, irritated lesions on your dog's skin. If you suspect your dog may be allergic to something she's eating, talk to your vet about a plan of action. He may prescribe a special hypoallergenic food and/or put your pet on an elimination diet to try to determine the culprit. Raw diets. There are a lot of trends when it comes to dietary options for dogs. For instance, you may have heard about BARF diets, which stand for either bones and raw food or biologically appropriate raw food. The idea is that dogs should eat what their ancestors ate in the wild, raw meat, bones, and organs. Proponents claim that this kind of diet has health benefits, such as shinier coats, cleaner teeth, healthier skin, and more energy, though no studies have backed that up. However, many veterinary experts, as well as the American Veterinary Medical Association, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and countless other organizations warn of the risks that come with a raw food diet for pets, such as the potential for E. coli and other foodborne illnesses, and the dangers of bones perforating a dog's organs. Also, a study in the Journal of the American Veterinary Medical Association evaluated raw diets and found that they had nutritional excesses or deficiencies that could cause serious health problems in dogs. Of course, it's up to you what kind of food you want to feed your dog. So, if you feel strongly about putting your pet on a raw food diet, I urge you to work very closely with your veterinarian to make sure your dog is getting a well-balanced diet that won't harm her. However, I think the risks of a BARF diet far outweigh the potential benefits, and I recommend avoiding it. Grooming basics. Grooming is a critical element of caring for your dog. It can vary greatly depending on your dog's coat, age, and the area in which you live. Here's an overview. Nails. It's very important to keep your dog's nails short. Not only can they scratch you and your furniture, but they can also snag on the carpet or even make it difficult for your dog to walk. However, cutting them appropriately can be tricky. Cut too deep and you can cause your dog a lot of pain and excessive bleeding. If you want to do it yourself, ask your groomer or veterinarian to show you how to do so correctly. Once you learn the proper technique, teach your dog to have a good association with having her nails trimmed. For instance, show her the nail clipper and allow her to smell it. Then touch the nail trimmer to her nail, and then put the trimmer around it. Go slowly. Reward your dog after each small step if she behaves calmly, gradually working up to being able to cut the nail. She will learn to tolerate getting her nails trimmed in no time. Teeth. We all know how important it is to brush our own teeth. Well, why would dogs be any different? Ideally, you should brush your dog's teeth daily. Doing so not only helps keep her breath fresh, but also helps prevent periodontal disease, gum disease, which is common among dogs and, when left unchecked, has been associated with serious problems such as heart, liver, or kidney disease. Pick up a dog toothbrush or a finger brush from a local pet supply store. Don't use human toothpaste as it contains high foaming detergents that a dog could swallow or inhale. They don't know how to spit it out. Instead, experiment with different flavors of dog toothpaste until you find one that your dog likes. Also, make sure your dog has plenty of dental treats and soft toys to chew on, as well as quality food. Some products marked as dental diets include plaque and/or tartar reduction ingredients. Talk to your vet about the best food and treats for your dog based on her dental and other health needs. The American Veterinary Dental College recommends that you ask your vet about plaque and tartar preventative options that can avert periodontal disease. Also, contact her if you notice signs of dental disease, such as loose or discolored teeth, bad breath, any bleeding or sensitivity in the mouth, drooling, dropping food, and a loss of appetite or weight. During your dog's wellness exams, or during any vet visit for that matter, your vet should also examine your dog's mouth to make sure it looks healthy. Eyes. It's important to regularly look into your dog's eyes as a way of communicating with her. When you do so, if you notice any gunk buildup in the corners, wipe it away with a moist cotton ball. Make sure your dog's hair doesn't fall into her eyes, which can certainly irritate them. Call your vet if you notice any signs of an eye infection, such as redness, cloudiness, excessive discharge, crusting, squinting, or a visible third eyelid. Yes, dogs have three. If your dog has rusty-looking tear stains at the corner of her eyes, which can be particularly noticeable on white dogs, first visit your vet to determine a possible cause such as allergies or issues with the tear ducts. Then, if the stains bother you, talk to your vet about various options. For instance, pet supply stores carry products that you can sprinkle on your dog's food to possibly clear up the stains. Ears. To clean your dog's ears, which you should ideally do once a week, you'll need cotton balls and a cleaning solution. Ask your vet which one he recommends for your dog. Dab the outside of the ear flap and then, with a new cotton ball, slowly work your way into the ear, stopping whenever you feel any resistance. If you notice that the cotton balls get very dirty, that could be a sign of an ear infection, so take your dog in for a medical exam. Other signs of an infection include discharge, crusting, an odor in the ear, redness, and swelling. Also, if your dog is scratching her ear a lot or rubbing it on the floor or other surfaces, or if she seems off balance, schedule an appointment to make sure everything is okay. She may have ear mites, a parasitic infection that can cause inflammation and irritation in the ear. Coat. Some dogs need to be brushed every day to prevent matting and excessive shedding, others every few weeks or even less frequently. It's important to use the correct kinds of combs and brushes. Your vet or a professional groomer can help you choose. Long-haired dogs may require a slicker brush and a bristle brush, while those with a smooth short coat may need a bristle brush and a rubber brush. You'll find that while some dogs love being brushed, others hate every second of it. If your dog falls into the latter category, go slowly. For example, first let your dog sniff the brush, then gently touch her with it, and work your way up to stroking her with the brush once. Reward every step of the way. Also, while you're brushing, check for fleas, flea dirt, flea droppings that look a little like black specks, ticks, any lesions, irritated areas, or other issues with your dog's skin that may require medical attention. Always be gentle. Bath time. Some experts recommend bathing dogs weekly. Others suggest less often, such as monthly. This is truly a matter of preference and lifestyle. For instance, if your dog sleeps in bed with you, you'll probably want to make extra sure she's clean and debris-free. You can bathe your dog in a regular bathtub or a small portable plastic tub. Some people even take their dogs into the shower with them. The key is to not get any water or shampoo in your dog's ears, eyes, or nose. Don't just dump water on her head. You might want to carefully put cotton balls in your dog's ears to play it extra safe. Also, always use mild shampoos specifically designed for dogs. Talk to your vet or groomer about which one is best for your dog. Lastly, if you're giving your dog regular baths, say weekly, make sure her skin doesn't become irritated or flaky, which can be a sign it's drying out. If that happens, either cut back on baths or choose a moisturizing shampoo that will help keep your dog's skin soft. Hiring a professional groomer. If you'd rather leave your dog's grooming needs to a professional, ask for recommendations from your vet as well as from friends, relatives, and neighbors with dogs. Some pet supply stores offer grooming on location, and the National Dog Groomers Association of America can also help you find groomers in your area. Besides cost, here are some other things to consider when shopping around. Does the groomer come to your house, or do you have to drop your dog off at a facility? Some groomers will even pick up your dog and drop her off at the end of the day. If it's a drop-off place, take a tour of the facility. Is the facility clean and odor-free, and do the staff workers seem friendly? Ask to see a grooming in action if possible. Does the groomer ask for your vaccination records and emergency contact information? The groomer should do that and also readily supply references if you ask for them. Ask whether your dog will spend a lot of time in a cage and, if so, whether it provides ample room for her to move around. How does the groomer dry dogs? Handheld hair dryers, stand dryers, or drying with a towel are best. If they use a dog drying cage, which, when used correctly, can dramatically decrease drying time, make sure the unit is monitored at all times and that the groomer is highly trained. Dogs have died from overheating, dehydration, and/or burns after being left in the cages for too long or at temperatures that are too high. No one national agency regulates or licenses pet groomers. However, check with the Better Business Bureau to see if any complaints have been filed against the grooming facility. Check out reviews on sites such as Yelp.com, too. Spaying and neutering. It's no secret how important it is to make sure your dog can't reproduce unless you're a highly qualified professional breeder. Spaying typically removes a female dog's ovaries, fallopian tubes, and uterus, while neutering removes a male dog's testicles. Doing so helps reduce pet overpopulation. Millions of unwanted dogs enter shelters annually, and many of them are euthanized. However, this is still a topic rife with controversy, and many myths about these surgeries persist. To set the record straight on a few of them, dogs are not more prone to gaining weight after being spayed or neutered, and male dogs won't suffer an identity crisis because they've lost their manhood. Dogs gain weight because of too much food and too little exercise, and there's certainly no reason to think that dogs identify with their sexuality in the way humans do. Of course, as with any medical procedure, there are some surgical and anesthetic risks involved, though the incidence of complications is very low. On the other hand, these surgeries provide many important benefits to your dog. Spayed female dogs have lower odds of developing breast, uterine, and ovarian cancers later in life. Neutered male dogs have a lower risk of prostate and testicular cancer, among other health problems. Also, behavioral issues related to hormones such as scent marking, roaming, and humping may be reduced, though remember that training is how marking is usually resolved. When's the best time to spay or neuter your pet? In females, typically before the first heat cycle, if possible, or before 6 months of age. In males, shoot for earlier than 8 months, though healthy dogs can have the surgery much younger. Talk to your vet about the right time for your pet. Signs you need to visit the vet. Besides your annual checkups with your vet, schedule a visit if you notice any of the following symptoms: vomiting, abnormal stools or potty habits, change in eating habits, loss of appetite, or excessive water consumption, discharge from the eyes, nose, or other body opening, any behavior that's out of the ordinary, such as excessive lethargy or sudden aggressiveness, excessive salivation, bald patches or any out-of-the-ordinary hair loss, dandruff, foul breath or foul odor coming from any part of the dog's body, any lumps, sores, or open wounds, difficulty getting up and lying down or any limping, excessive licking, biting, or scratching any body part, or head shaking. Vaccinations. Like humans, dogs need certain vaccinations to keep them safe from illnesses that can otherwise cause very serious symptoms. One example, parvovirus, is a highly contagious viral illness that can cause vomiting, lethargy, severe, often bloody diarrhea, and dehydration. It can even lead to death. However, vaccines do come with some health risks, such as soreness and allergic reactions, so you should work with your veterinarian to determine exactly what your dog needs. A puppy should start receiving core vaccinations around 6 weeks and then every 3 weeks until she's 16 weeks old, with the exception of rabies, which is administered once between 12 and 16 weeks at a minimum. Adult dogs need to be revaccinated every 1 to 3 years. Your vet will determine how often based on the vaccine, your dog's particular health, and her environment. In 2011, the American Animal Hospital Association updated its guideline recommendations for dog vaccines. They list the core vaccines, the ones universally recommended, and non-core vaccines, which are optional based on your dog's exposure. Again, work with your vet to determine which ones your dog needs. Here's a breakdown. Core, canine distemper virus, canine adenovirus 2, canine parvovirus 2, rabies, non-core, bordetella, leptospirosis, Lyme disease, canine parainfluenza virus, canine influenza, measles, puppies younger than 6 weeks or breeding females. Parasites. From fleas and ticks to worms and giardia, all dogs are susceptible to various different parasites throughout their lifetime. Here's an overview. External parasites, fleas and ticks. The notorious enemy of all dogs. Fleas have long caused serious problems for both animals and humans alike. They're responsible for the plague. Fleas are wingless insects that jump from host to host and feed on them. They can cause problems for dogs such as anemia, tapeworm, when a flea carrying tapeworm eggs is ingested, and allergic reactions. If your dog gets fleas, some signs include excessive scratching or biting of the skin, hair loss, hot spots, and flea dirt, which looks like specks of dirt but is actually flea droppings, First, call your vet to determine an immediate treatment plan for your dog. Treatment might include a special shampoo or topical liquid that will kill the fleas and their eggs. Then, contact a local exterminator to discuss options for banishing the pests from your yard. These experts can also tell you other ways to eliminate the fleas from your home based on how bad the infestation is. For instance, first steps could be washing all bedding in hot water and vacuuming every carpet and then disposing of the vacuum bag. Ticks, on the other hand, are arachnids. Like fleas, they will suck the blood out of their host, which can lead to anemia. They also transmit very dangerous illnesses such as Lyme disease, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, and Ehrlichia. If you notice a tick on your dog, put on a pair of disposable gloves, wipe the area with rubbing alcohol, and carefully remove the tick with a pair of tweezers. Make sure you pull the tick straight out. Don't twist it. And check that you don't leave any part of the critter behind. You should preserve the tick in a closed container with rubbing alcohol, so if your dog does fall ill in the coming weeks, your vet can know which type of tick was the culprit. Wash the site where the tick was on your dog thoroughly and call your vet to discuss a further course of action. For both fleas and ticks, yearly prevention is your best bet. There are topical medications and oral pills, many of which are a two-for-one combo that prevent both parasites. Also, keep your dog's bedding and living area clean and check her regularly for fleas and ticks, especially if you live in a humid or woody area. Internal parasites: worms, Giardia, and Coccidia. Unfortunately, in addition to being susceptible to external parasites, all dogs are also susceptible to internal parasites that can lead to a whole slew of health problems. The key is to work closely with your doctor to prevent these parasites if possible, or treat them as soon as you notice any symptoms. Here's the breakdown. Heartworm. These are parasitic roundworms that live in the arteries and heart of an animal. They can grow as long as 12 inches and live up to 7 years. The worm spreads from animal to animal via mosquito bites and can include symptoms such as weight loss, coughing, and difficulty breathing. It can eventually lead to heart failure, lung disease, even death. While heartworms are most prevalent in areas prone to mosquitoes, such as along the Gulf of Mexico, the Atlantic Ocean coastline, and along the Mississippi River, it has been reported in all 50 states. According to the Food and Drug Administration, FDA, there are two drugs approved to treat heartworm disease. However, both are very costly and can be toxic for dogs. Instead, year-round prevention is the best medicine. The FDA has approved several products for safe, effective prevention of heartworm disease. Such products are available as a topical liquid, oral tablets, or an injectable. Talk to your vet about which type is best for your dog. Other worms. Roundworms, tapeworms, hookworms, and whipworms all live in the intestines of dogs, and they can cause serious issues ranging from weight loss and diarrhea to life-threatening anemia and lethargy. Roundworms and hookworms are also zoonotic, which means they can be transmitted from an animal to a human. Notify your vet if your dog has diarrhea, a change in her appetite or coat, or excessive coughing. You may also notice the worms in your dog's stool or under her tail. While the deworming that your dog probably got as a puppy will get her off to a good start, it's still important to take further steps to protect your dog. For instance, tapeworms are passed to dogs from infected fleas, so a flea prevention regimen is key. The medicine you give your dog for heartworm prevention will likely also protect against most worms. What about protecting you and the other people in your family? Good hygiene, such as washing your hands as needed, will help ensure that if your dog ever does have worms, she won't pass them on to you. Giardia and Coccidia. When swallowed, these highly contagious zoonotic single-celled parasites can damage your dog's intestinal lining and limit the amount of nutrients she gets from food. They can also cause diarrhea. Fortunately, when detected, they can be eliminated with medication. Ask Zach. Helping the medicine go down. My dog absolutely hates taking medicine. Any tips on how to get her to take a pill? Just like humans, some dogs take pills and other forms of medicine without a fight. Others seem to have a lot of difficulty with it. While there's not a surefire spoonful of sugar technique that will work across the board, there are some tricks that can help. First, ask your vet if she has a chewable version of the medication. If not, hide the pill in a bit of wet dog food or inside a piece of soft meat, peanut butter, or cheese. You can also try using a special treat designed specifically to hide pills. However, plenty of clever dogs will catch on pretty quickly. They may somehow eat all of their food and purposely avoid the pill, or they'll chew up the treat and spit the pill back out. If that's the case, gently open your dog's mouth. Put the pill at the base of her tongue. Close her mouth and tilt it back until she swallows. If you think your dog might bite you, ask your vet for alternatives. Poisoning. My dogs just got into my trash and ate the remainder of the chocolate cake we threw out. I've heard chocolate is toxic for dogs. What should I do? Call your nearest poison control center or the ASPCA Animal Poison Control, 888-426-4435, and get to your vet right away. I know some people might want to take a wait-and-see approach, but even a small amount of chocolate can be toxic to a dog, and it's difficult for medical experts to determine how your dog is doing over the phone. The same goes for other toxins, ranging from raisins and houseplants to prescription meds and common household cleaners. See Chapter 2 for a reminder of which foods and other items are dangerous to dogs. Getting your dog help immediately can also mean a better prognosis for her. Do not try to self-treat your dog or induce vomiting unless your vet or poison expert specifically tells you to do so. However, when you do get to the vet, it can be helpful if you can bring a sample and/or packaging of whatever item your dog ingested. Hot weather. I live in a state where it's hot and humid all summer long. How do I help my dog to handle the heat? I totally understand this question. I live in New Orleans, where the summer weather can be downright sweltering and stifling. Just as you take measures to protect yourself from the elements, it's important to do the same for your dog. Here's what to do. Make sure your dog has an unlimited supply of water, and if she has to spend any time outside, plenty of shade. Your dog's exercise needs don't suddenly dwindle during hot spells. However, you'll probably need to make modifications. For instance, play fetch or go for long walks first thing in the morning or at dusk when temperatures may be a little cooler. Also, if your dog is, say, used to going for a 5-mile run with you in the morning, you might want to scale back on that a bit until you're sure she's accustomed to the weather. Of course, always bring lots of extra water with you. I always advise against leaving your dog in a car unattended. However, that recommendation is especially crucial during summer months when the temperature in the car can rapidly skyrocket and feel like an oven. Don't underestimate how quickly that can happen. According to the American Veterinary Medical Association, the temperature in your car can rise 20 degrees in only 10 minutes, 30 degrees in 20 minutes, and so on. Even if it's a comfortable 80 degrees outside, after 30 minutes, it can be 114 degrees in the car. In such temperatures, dogs can become severely dehydrated. Some suffer brain damage, and many die. Cracking the window even a few inches doesn't help. Just don't leave your dog in the car alone. If you have to go somewhere and you can't bring your dog inside with you, then leave her at home. Whenever possible, walk your dog in the shade or on the grass. Asphalt, metal, and other substances can burn the pads on her paws. Make sure your dog has a fresh haircut, but don't shave her. A dog's fur can help protect her from the heat and from sunburns. Don't forget about sunscreen. If your dog has any bald patches or little hair, make sure you lather her with protective lotion before you head out. Dogs' noses and ears are also susceptible to sunburn. Talk to your vet about the best kind of sunscreen for your dog. Cold weather. I live in an area where winters are bitterly cold. Any tips on protecting my dog that time of year? Just as with excessively hot weather, cold weather climates come with their own set of potential dangers for dogs. Of course, how much your dog can tolerate will depend on her coat, size, age, amount of body fat, and overall health. Here are some safety precautions you can take. Know the dangers of antifreeze. It's a sweet substance that dogs may find tasty, but even a tiny amount can poison your pet. Clean up any spills immediately. If you live in an area where it snows, there will likely be salt on the sidewalks. Wipe your dog's paws whenever you come into the house. The salt can irritate the pads of her feet and make her sick if she licks it. She may also have antifreeze or other chemicals on her paws that you need to remove. Don't let your dog eat the snow. Again, it can contain chemicals that could be toxic to her. Always keep your pet on leash, especially during a snowstorm, and make sure she's wearing her ID tags at all times. More dogs are lost in winter than in any other season. If your dog has short hair and will tolerate clothing, consider getting her a coat or sweater that will keep her extra warm. Booties can help keep her paws toasty too. Make sure your dog still gets plenty of exercise in the cold weather, always keeping her safety in mind, of course. In fact, many dogs love the snow, so bundle up and get outside. What if you or your dog just can't handle the cold? The good news is that there are plenty of indoor classes for dogs. See Chapter 9 to learn more about such options. Losing teeth. I'm always finding my puppy's little teeth around the house. I even found her chewing on one the other day. Is this normal? Yes, it's normal. Dogs start developing 28 baby teeth, also known as deciduous, at around 3 weeks of life. However, by 4 months, these super sharp tiny teeth start falling out to make room for 42 permanent adult teeth. Whereas a child will take years to lose all her baby teeth, a dog will go through the process in a matter of months. You might find the teeth throughout the house, but chances are you never will. Many dogs swallow them, and that's okay. Of course, call your vet if your dog loses a permanent tooth for any reason, or if you notice that she has any retained teeth. That is, a baby tooth that stays in place even after the permanent tooth has erupted. These retained teeth can force the permanent teeth to grow at abnormal angles and can also lead to tooth decay, so your vet may have to extract them. Fear of the vet. My dog starts shaking and whimpering anytime I get near the vet's office. What should I do to make her more comfortable on visits? Think about it from your dog's perspective. Imagine if every time you went to a particular place, you got poked and probed and possibly had to endure multiple injections. Now imagine that you didn't understand that the people doing this to you were only trying to keep you healthy. Well, that's how it is for dogs, just as it is for very young children. And it's no wonder many of them seem to downright despise vet visits. Some get really anxious beforehand and may tremble or cry. Others have to be literally carried into the office because otherwise, they wouldn't set one paw through the door. I'm not going to promise you that you can help any dog love her visits to the vet. However, you can take steps to make them a little easier for her. First, make sure you choose a vet who has a good bedside manner. An extra gentle touch or soothing voice can help calm your dog. See Chapter 3 for suggestions on making your dog comfortable during vet visits from day 1, which may also help dogs who have already developed a fear of the vet. Take your dog on trips to your vet's office at times when she doesn't have an appointment. Ask your vet and the other staff members to shower your dog with lots of affection and treats. By doing this, your dog won't always have a negative association with going to the vet. It's as though she starts to realize, hey, this place can be kind of fun. If your dog seems truly anxious or fearful about her vet visits, some signs include trembling, growling, snapping, or panting. Talk to your vet about what else you can do to help settle her nerves. In case of an emergency, no one likes to think about it, but it's always important to be prepared in case your dog becomes seriously ill or injured. Doing so can help you stay calm in case of an emergency. This, in turn, can lead to a much better prognosis for your pet. Here's a checklist of things to do. Keep important numbers taped to your refrigerator, saved in your phone, or somewhere else that's easily accessible. Include your vet's number and address and the number and address for your emergency clinic. Also include the ASPCA Animal Poison Control 24-hour hotline number, 888-426-4435. There may be a slight charge for the call, but it can save your dog's life. Call your veterinarian immediately. If the office is closed, contact your emergency vet clinic. If you're not sure whether or not your dog needs to be seen, always err on the side of caution. Keep a first aid kit on hand for your dog. You may want to include hydrocortisone cream, tape and gauze, saline wash, antiseptic wipes, and a rectal thermometer and petroleum. Of course, you should call your vet if your dog has sustained a serious injury, but with these supplies, you can at least help manage symptoms until you can get her to the office. If you have to transport your dog, do so very carefully. Ideally, have someone else drive so you can tend to your pet. Keep your dog warm and safe, ideally in a travel crate if possible. Also, be extra careful. Even the friendliest dog may snap or nip if she's in pain and scared. Disaster preparedness. It's always important to have a disaster preparedness plan in place for your loved ones in the event of a fire, tornado, hurricane, or other natural disaster. However, it's crucial that you include your pet in that plan. During Hurricane Katrina, I saw firsthand what can happen to animals during these catastrophes. Far too many dogs and other pets were stranded and never reunited with their people. Many others starved to death or drowned. Having a pre-established protocol for such situations can help ensure that every member of your family, including the furry ones, stays safe and sound. Here are some things you can do. If you have to evacuate your home, try your best to never leave your pet behind. If at all possible, take her with you or arrange other accommodations. Many disaster shelters will not accept pets, so keep that in mind. Know of pet-friendly motels or hotels that you might stay in, a boarding facility or a veterinarian who will take your dog, or relatives or friends who will pet sit in a pinch. Make sure your dog is microchipped and always wearing her identification tags. Put together a pet emergency preparedness kit. Assemble your dog's food, bottled water, bowls, any medication your dog takes, and a leash in a sturdy bag or container. Include a good recent photo of your dog in case she gets lost during an emergency. Keep this kit, along with your dog's first aid kit, somewhere safe and easily accessible so you can bring it with you if you have to leave your home in a hurry, or head to a safe room in your house during, say, a tornado. Run through a fire drill with your family and include your pet as part of it. Consider purchasing a pet rescue window decal, a bright sticker you put on your home's front window which alerts emergency workers, policemen, or firefighters that you have a pet inside. The decals are available at pet supply stores and many online retailers. Learn more about disaster plans that include your pet at ready.gov and redcross.org. Being prepared can save your dog's life. Chapter 9. Time for fun. Cool tricks, traveling, exercise, and more. Raising a dog is certainly a lot of hard work and responsibility, but it can be a total blast, too. In fact, it should be. Teaching your dog tricks, getting him involved in dog sports, and finding other fun things to do together can be beneficial for him in so many ways. First, spending more time with your dog and teaching him new concepts simply helps you learn to communicate better with one another. Also, since these activities are entertaining and even amusing at times, many people particularly enjoy teaching them. That relaxed, good mood in turn helps strengthen your bond, a critical ingredient if you hope to have an exceptionally behaved dog. Another advantage is that tricks and other activities teach your dog to think outside the box. It's like advanced math for high school students. Even if a person doesn't require the knowledge of, say, calculus or trigonometry long term, learning it strengthens the brain and helps one become a better thinker. This is what tricks and extracurricular activities are to your dog, though probably more enjoyable than some of those math classes, in my opinion. You should engage in additional creative training simply to keep your dog mentally content. This is especially true if you have a moderate to high energy dog. These dogs are usually very smart and they love to learn. So if you don't give their energy and curiosity an outlet, they may wind up with behavioral issues. For those of you with these types of dogs, this chapter may not be optional. Tricks and dog sports are just part of the story. Remember, your dog is now a family member, one you should incorporate into your life as much as possible. That could mean taking him on road trips or other family vacations, or simply spending the afternoon in the pool on a hot day. You might want your pet to join you on your morning run, or you could be interested in taking him hiking. In this chapter, I'll walk you through all of these options and more so that you and your dog can have an exciting and rewarding life together. Super fun tricks. Basic training skills such as sit and come are non-negotiables that our dogs should know. These basics are the equivalent of teaching a young child to stay quiet while you're on a business call and to not run into the street without looking both ways. Tricks, on the other hand, are like teaching your child to play the piano or hit a baseball. They may be optional, but they'll definitely enrich his life. When you're ready to teach your dog a new trick, first get him mentally warmed up. For example, I'll start off a training session with a basic sit and a few other skills I know the dog has perfected, and I'll reward generously for the heck of it. This gets him psyched up about training. I also keep the mood light and optimistic. I even say, "I'm going to teach you something new, okay?" in a very sincere way. Over time, your dog will learn exactly what this means. As for rewards, feel free to give your dog one every time he does a trick. Whereas you'll likely want to wean off the rewards for the basic skills, it's fine to always give a treat or a little playtime when your pet does something extra special. Lastly, remember that not every trick is meant for every dog. So try a bunch and see what sticks. Sometimes your dog will pick up on a new trick very quickly, but other times it may take quite a few training sessions. Be patient. Here's how to teach some of my favorite tricks. Shake. This is the easiest trick ever, especially since many dogs will offer their paw naturally. If your dog does, all you might have to do is reward him when he does so and say shake, or an alternative such as paw, so he begins correlating the word to the trick. This is called capturing a behavior. Eventually, your dog will understand that the word and the trick are connected, and you can ask for the trick before he performs it, instead of saying the word after the fact. If your dog doesn't do shake naturally, you can still teach it to him. Here's what to do. 1. Ask your dog to sit, then tickle the back of his front legs a bit. Most dogs will move their paw ever so slightly here. That's when you enthusiastically say yes and follow up with a reward. It's important to reward for the smallest move in the right direction at first, even if your dog does it accidentally. 2. Continue this exercise and encourage your dog with a yes and a treat every time he shows he's on the right track. Soon he'll likely conclude that movements of his paw are what's working. Once he sees that even a slight movement results in an awesome outcome, he'll be a bit more eager to try to do what you're asking him to do. You'll notice a gradual progression from slight movements to more pronounced, deliberate ones, usually in 1 to 2 sessions. When you are happy the movement your dog is making is pretty close to the final trick, say shake just prior to your dog's offering his paw, so he starts correlating the word with what he's doing. 3. Some dogs will alternate which paw they offer, especially at first. Reward for both, at least initially. Play dead. This is the trick where your dog lies down on his side or back when you ask and looks like he's pretending to be dead. It's a classic crowd pleaser. It's impressive because it seems so complicated, but it really isn't. You get a lot of bang for your buck on this one. Here's what to do. 1. Play dead is easiest taught through lure training, which I explained in Chapter 6. Start off by letting your dog know that you have an amazing treat that he really loves. Ask him to lie down. If your dog still hasn't perfected down, you may have to lure him into the position. Remember to hold the treat really close to his nose. I find it helpful to pretend that the treat and your dog's nose are magnets. If the two are too far apart, the magnetic connection is lost. 2. Once your dog is lying down on his stomach, move the treat to the left or right and then over his shoulder, but still very close to his nose. Experiment with both sides, as some dogs are more likely to go in one direction than another. Go slowly. Almost everyone goes too fast here at first. Keep moving the treat until your dog is lying down on his side and settled in that position for a couple of seconds. It will take a few tries before your dog understands what you want him to do. As your dog performs a rough draft of the trick, say something like, "Yes, play dead," so that now you have a phrase to pair with the behavior. 3. After you've done this a few times and your dog seems to be getting the picture, next lure with the treat a bit farther away from your dog's face. If you're seeing success, this is also a good time to begin to use a primitive hand signal with your luring hand. Think of this as half hand signal and half lure. Any subtle variation from a lure into something resembling your own version of what the hand signal will become is what you're looking for here. Over time, you can gradually evolve this hand signal into anything you want. The thing about hand signals is that they should be individual to you and your dog. 4. Over the next 2 to 10 training sessions, polish up the trick as you wish. A common variant is making a pretend gun with your hand as the hand signal and saying, "Bang!" instead of "play dead." This will get you extra laughs, and your dog will relish the attention. Roll over. Roll over is simply play dead 2.0 in many respects. Here's what to do. Follow the steps I just outlined for play dead. However, instead of pausing at the play dead position, continue luring your dog until he rolls over all the way. Reward for even a millimeter of extra movement here at first. It's totally normal for some dogs to resist rolling over, especially if they've already learned play dead, since they may be thinking, I know this one. 2. Be patient as your dog works through the confusion and encourage him to make it the whole way over by using a treat and lots of enthusiasm. This may take some time. Whatever you do, do not physically force your dog to roll over. It's super common for people to do this, but this sets back rollover training because most dogs hate being forced onto their backs. If your dog is particularly resistant, you'll just need to put in some extra training. 3. As soon as your dog makes it the whole way over, say, yes, roll over, and give him a treat. Celebrate for a moment and then immediately try again in an attempt to build momentum on your progress. Over time, focus on introducing a custom hand signal, such as making a small circle with your finger, as you progressively move the treat farther away. Speak. Getting your dog to bark when you ask him to speak is super cute. Speak comes a lot more naturally for some dogs than others. If your dog is a big barker, then this one may be easy for him. If he's more reluctant, be extra patient. Here's what to do. 1. First, it's especially important to use a strong currency that your dog really loves. For this trick, my default currency is real meat. However, if you have a toy-obsessed dog, then a toy he absolutely goes crazy for can work too, provided you've taught him to sit and stay for this toy. 2. Stand in front of your dog presenting the potential reward. Simply wait at first. If your dog is super interested in the reward, don't give it to him at first. 3. Now be patient. The idea is to wait until your dog barks as if he's saying, "What are you waiting for? Give me the treat already." At which time you should say, "Yes, speak," and reward promptly. This can take anywhere from a few seconds or minutes to several training sessions. 4. Incorporate a hand signal of your choice when you tell your dog, "Speak." Backstall. This is my go-to trick when I need to teach a dog something impressive, flashy, and awe-inspiring. In fact, when filming the pilot episode of my TV show, Superfetch, this was the trick I selected to teach my first guest on the show. Also, when Venus and I made an appearance on Late Night with Jimmy Fallon, this was one of the tricks I had her do with Jimmy. What's a backstall? It's where your dog literally jumps on your back and stays there. Obviously, there are limitations to this trick. If you have any back issues or if your dog is particularly heavy, you should probably skip it. Also, you'll want to have sufficient padding on your back, such as a thick sweatshirt, since dogs have nails that can be sharp. Take care to practice this in a grassy or padded area, and know that while very small dogs can do this too, you may just need to stay extra close to the ground. Here's what to do. 1. To get started, use a table, chair, bench, or other solid platform for your dog to stand on. The height should be low enough for your dog to easily jump on, and it's critical that the platform be very stable, as dogs often tend to become nervous about standing on shaky things. Teach your dog to jump onto the platform by encouraging him to do so with a treat or toy and plenty of good energy. It's common for many dogs to jump on and then immediately off, perhaps touching the platform only with two paws. At first, reward any small success to show your dog he's on the right track. Gradually encourage him to stay on the platform until you tell him to get down. 2. Once your dog jumps onto the platform with all four paws, say yes and reward vigorously. Next, ask him to stay for 1 or 2 seconds. Say stall so he starts to associate the word with the action. 3. Next, it's time to encourage your dog to climb or jump on top of your back. I advise having a friend help you do this if possible, though it's not necessary. First, support yourself on all fours so that your back resembles a tabletop. Keep your back level and encourage your dog to jump onto it. This process can be really awkward, so again, reward for every tiny success. Even if your dog gets only one paw on your back, reward him in the beginning stages. Remember, you're taking a step back when you change a variable, which, in this case, is jumping on your back instead of the platform. Your dog may be a bit confused at first. This is normal. 4. The first magic moment to look for is when all four paws touch your back simultaneously, even if just for a brief moment. Celebrate this as though your dog has mastered the trick. Get a feel for how comfortable he is with all four paws on your back over the next many attempts. As he progresses, Your goal is to increase the amount of time he spends with all four paws on your back before you ask him to get down. What a fun way to practice stay. 5. The goal, at first, is to have your dog stand on your straight, stable back. Truthfully, that trick alone will knock the socks off of people, and you may see no reason to take it a step further. However, for those of you feeling ambitious, you can add an extra wow factor. Once your dog seems very comfortable standing on your flat back, you can try standing up slowly so that your back is at a 45-degree angle. Or, if you've taught your dog to sit pretty, this can be a great way to combine two awesome tricks. This trick was how Venus and I used to open the show when we performed with Stunt Dog Productions years ago, and it always got the crowd fired up. If you get good at this, you should easily be able to schedule an appearance on your local morning news to show off too. Traveling with your dog. Why leave your dog at home when you can take him with you? From car rides to air travel, here's how to keep your pet safe and happy when you're on the go. Car rides. I've driven all over the United States with my dogs, and they have really come to accept the car as an extension of our house. In fact, all of my dogs always hop into the car and relax immediately. However, it's important to take steps to make sure your dog is comfortable during car rides. As always, safety first. Never let your dog sit in the passenger seat. If the airbag goes off, it can kill him. Instead, use a crate in the back of the car, which is the safest way to transport your pet. Just make sure that you've introduced the crate properly and that your dog is comfortable with it before you head out on a long car trip. Another option, a special doggy booster seat or harness that attaches to the seatbelt in the back of the car. You can find these at pet supply stores and through online retailers. Just like humans, dogs can get car sick, especially puppies or young dogs, because their inner ears haven't fully developed yet. Also, adult dogs who haven't traveled much in a car might get nauseous because of motion sickness or anxiety about the ride. Take precautions such as not feeding your dog a big meal right before getting in the car and making sure you bring towels or an old blanket so that if he does get sick, cleanup will be a lot easier. Your dog is more likely to relax during a 3-hour car ride if he's already been acclimated to the car for 10 to 20 minutes at a time. Gradually increase the time so that he'll more easily adjust to a longer car ride. Also, if you take him in the car only when he's going to the vet or the groomer, he may have a negative association with it. The more experiences your dog has with going to a happy place like the park or a pet supply store, the more eagerly he'll get in the car. During your road trip, plan on stopping at least every 3 to 4 hours, more often if your dog is young or very small. Let your dog play some fetch or take an extended walk. You need to stretch your legs and use the bathroom, and so does your dog. Never leave your dog unattended in a car. Because temperatures in a closed car can quickly soar in warm months and can plummet in cold ones, many dogs have died when left even for just a few minutes. Also, personally, I wouldn't risk it. Lots of dogs are snatched when left unattended. As tempting as it is, don't let your dog stick his entire head out the window while you're driving. He can get hit with foreign objects, flying debris, and dust particles. Also, his ears can suffer damage from flopping in the wind. His eyes can suffer abrasions, or he could fall out of the car altogether. Instead, crack the window open a bit so he can enjoy all the fascinating and different smells during the journey. Hey, for them, that's half the fun. Air travel. Small dogs are allowed to fly in the cabin on many commercial airlines if they can fit in a travel case and under the seat in front of you. However, if you're planning a trip, make sure you call ahead of time. Most flights can accommodate only a limited number of pets, and some airlines won't allow animals when going to certain destinations. You may have to pay an extra fee, which can be around $100 or more, twice that if you're flying round trip. Confirm the dimensions of the pet carrier the airplane can accommodate, and know that your pet and the carrier often count as your carry-on. Also, check what kind of paperwork you have to bring. For instance, some airlines require proof of recent vaccinations or a health certificate. Lastly, keep in mind that some dogs are less suitable for flying than others, especially ones who are older or brachycephalic, dogs with pushed-in faces, such as pugs. Talk to your vet about whether or not your dog can handle flying. Other things you can do to help the trip go smoothly: exercise your dog before the flight to make sure he's tired, so that he may sleep during the flight or at least not have so much nervous energy. Also, make sure he relieves himself before you get on board. You should carry or walk your pet through security while the carrier goes through the x-ray machine. However, at any other time, you will have to keep your dog in the carrier. Once on board, give your dog a favorite toy that will keep him occupied during the flight. Talk to him in a calm voice and let him know he's safe. If he starts to cry, he may be anxious, so sneak him a treat or two to communicate that you're there for him and that this isn't so bad. Just never open the carrier enough that he can get out. Bring a leash and a bowl so you can give your dog some water and take him for a well-deserved walk the second you're able. While a small dog can usually travel on board with you, larger dogs cannot. So if you have, say, a 40-pound dog and want to fly with him, you'll have to either check him as baggage on your flight, on which he'll fly in the cargo hold, or have him fly as cargo on a separate flight, depending on the airline. Are these options safe? To be honest, they may not be. Major organizations such as the Humane Society of the United States strongly recommend that people avoid taking their dogs on planes, particularly if that means the dog has to travel in the cargo hold. Also, according to the United States Department of Transportation, each year many animals who travel in cargo die. Others are injured or lost. However, I understand that sometimes you have no choice. I once flew with Venus to appear on Late Night with David Letterman years ago. She's about 35 pounds, so I couldn't bring her on board. Driving would have taken too much time since it was last minute, and I obviously couldn't leave her home. This was very early on in my career, and to be honest, it really stressed me out. Fortunately, Venus was fine. However, ever since then, I've insisted on driving my dogs everywhere. Once, I even drove with Venus from Atlanta to Los Angeles to do a 5-minute appearance for the Television Critics Association. A few weeks later, I drove round trip from Atlanta to New York twice in 2 weeks to appear on The Rachel Ray Show and Late Night with Jimmy Fallon in order to avoid flying. If you have to fly with your dog and check him as baggage or have him fly alone as cargo, definitely contact the airlines to learn of any restrictions. For instance, the Federal Animal Welfare Act enforced by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, USDA, won't allow pets to fly unless they are at least 8 weeks old and weaned. The animals also must be protected from direct sunlight, and they must not be exposed to temperatures above 85 degrees Fahrenheit and below 45 degrees Fahrenheit for more than 45 minutes when being moved to and from the airplane to the terminal, though, in the case of the latter, a vet could sign a certificate stating that the dog is acclimated to cold climates. Also, talk to your vet and make sure your dog's fit for traveling. Some airlines don't allow brachycephalic breeds to fly in the cargo hold at all. Most airlines have a special department or call center that will thoroughly brief you on what to expect, so contact them as well. Here's what else you can do to help make your dog's experience as pleasant as possible. Find a secure, well-constructed pet transport kennel to transport your dog. According to the USDA, no particular kennels have been pre-approved by the airlines, the airline associations, or the USDA themselves, so any such claims are false advertising. Instead, find a well-constructed, secure kennel and get your dog accustomed to it well before he's scheduled to fly. Book direct nonstop flights only. Avoid very busy travel days and peak hours. The less chaos and fewer changes, the safer and less hectic it will be for your dog. Make sure your dog is microchipped and that all of his identification tags are secure. The kennel he's traveling in should also have all of your contact information. The International Air Transport Association recommends avoiding the use of tranquilizers or other forms of sedation to calm a dog during a flight. If you really think your dog needs this, talk to your vet. Pet-friendly accommodations. When you travel with your pet, you may need to find overnight accommodations that will accept him. Luckily, it's not that difficult. So many hotels and motels are pet-friendly nowadays. Many popular hotel chains accommodate pets. Also, websites such as bringfido.com can help you find dog-friendly hotels in your area. However, if you're considering a particular hotel, call ahead of time to find out about any restrictions. Some hotels allow only dogs up to a certain size or require that you stay on the lowest floor. Many charge a pet fee. Ask about perks, too. Some hotels offer treats, special bedding, bowls, and even pet sitting or pet walking services for their furry guests. Another option? Consider renting. Through sites such as VRBO.com, HomeAway.com, and Airbnb.com, you can rent anything from a tiny studio apartment to a multi-million-dollar estate. Some places require that you stay for a week or longer, but many allow you to rent for just a night or two. Rates run the gamut, but you can likely find a place that fits your budget. A little secret, a lot of rentals will say they won't accept pets, but if you fall in love with a particular place, it's worth a call. Many owners will make exceptions, especially if you have a small, well-behaved dog. Exercise. As I explained in Chapter 4, age-appropriate exercise is one of the principles of my training program. It's important for dogs in so many ways. It reduces unwanted behavior, such as digging and chewing, helps them sleep better at night, keeps their weight in check, and increases mobility as they get older. However, each dog can handle a different amount of exercise, so talk to your vet about what's ideal for yours. If your dog has a lot of energy, you'll almost certainly want to schedule at least 20 minutes to an hour of exercise daily. So what kind of exercise? The critical thing is that the form of exercise you choose should involve you. In fact, it turns out that exercising together is an indicator that you'll get the physical activity you need. A study in the American Journal of Public Health found that people who have dogs have as much as 77% higher odds of getting enough physical activity as compared to those who don't have dogs. Of course, fetch is an excellent option, which I explain how to teach in Chapter 4. A lot of people also like running with their dogs. Always start off slowly. Don't try to accomplish a 5K right off the bat. Instead, gradually add distance and increase speed to make sure your dog can handle it. Bring along extra water to help your dog stay hydrated, and if it's particularly hot or cold out, make accommodations to protect him from the elements. If your dog can tolerate longer distances and it seems you're holding him back from running faster, you can also ride your bike and have him run alongside you. Discretion is certainly advised here. You'll need to pay attention to your dog, the road, traffic, and any potential distractions. Ideally, practice this in very low traffic areas, such as dead-end streets, and hold the leash but never tie it to your bike. Again, double-check with your vet when you can start running with your dog. Some experts advise that you wait until the dog is full-grown. Of course, if running isn't your thing, there are plenty of other activities, many of which I explain in this chapter. Ask Zach. Swim lessons. We have a pool in our backyard, and I'm afraid my dog is going to fall in. Will he know how to swim, or do I have to teach him? Most dogs instinctively know how to swim. However, this is one area where breed stereotypes, which normally drive me crazy, actually ring true for the most part. Some dogs instantly love water and jump right in. Others can swim, but need a little coaching and possibly encouragement. Some breeds should probably avoid the water altogether. For instance, dogs with heavy chests compared to their hind legs, such as bulldogs, can sink right to the bottom. Brachycephalic breeds, those with pushed-in faces, such as pugs, bulldogs, Cavalier King Charles Spaniels, and Boston Terriers, also usually have trouble swimming. Keep in mind that while some small breeds can swim, they'll tire pretty quickly. Same goes for puppies. Regardless of the type of dog you have and whether or not he's a natural Michael Phelps, it's important to remember that any dog can drown in a pool. That's why it's crucial to take the safety precautions that I outlined in Chapter 2, such as installing a pool fence or a motion detector system. Don't get me wrong, swimming is an excellent low-impact way to exercise your dog, and I encourage it for most dogs. Here's what to do to ensure safe, happy swimming. Consider getting a life vest for your dog for extra protection, at least until you're comfortable that your dog knows how to swim and get out of the pool. Also, if your dog can't swim, a vest can allow him to enjoy pool time with his family. Never just toss your dog into the pool to see what happens. That'll likely terrify him and create a negative association with the pool, let alone the fact it can be dangerous. Your goal should be making the experience as positive as possible. Get into the pool yourself and let your pet run around the perimeter. Entice him closer to the pool by offering treats or toys. If at any point you think your dog is overly anxious, take a break. However, if you think he's doing fine, then let him stand briefly on the first step of the pool and see how he does. If he jumps out, that's okay. Try again in a few minutes. If he does great, then reward him and gradually increase the time he spends in the pool. For instance, let him swim a few laps, but always stand right next to him to offer support the second he needs it. You want him to always feel safe. At first, you'll have to help your dog get out of the pool by either guiding him to the steps or lifting him out if need be. However, it's important to make sure he learns to do it on his own. So after your dog is comfortable swimming and coming to you while in the water, you should be able to guide him to the pool steps by calling him, just like you do on land. Repeat this often to really make sure he understands where the steps are located. Once your dog is done swimming for the day, rinse him off with regular water to wash out any chlorine left on his coat. Hiking. Hiking is a big part of my lifestyle. Is it okay to take my dog with me on hikes? Absolutely. Hiking is one of the best forms of exercise your dog can do. It stimulates him physically, of course, but with the myriad of sights, smells, and sounds, he'll be mentally engaged as well. That's why most dogs love this activity. However, make sure you take the following safety precautions. Bring plenty of water for your dog and a small bowl. Don't let your dog drink from any puddles, lakes, ponds, or other bodies of water. They could contain parasites and other contaminants. Also, if you're hiking long enough that you need to bring snacks for yourself, bring along some food or treats for your dog as well. You may even want to feed him half his daily meal beforehand and then give him the rest halfway through the hike. Let your dog off-leash only if you are very certain he'll come when called, regardless of any distractions. Trust me, there will be plenty of those. Also, double-check that the area you're hiking in permits dogs to wander off-leash. Of course, keeping your dog on-leash can help you navigate him away from any dangers, such as poison ivy, broken glass, or other animals you might encounter. Sure, you're in nature, but you still need to always pick up after your dog. Your fellow hikers will appreciate it. Bring poop bags. As always, make sure your dog is up to date with his vaccinations, microchipped, and wearing identification tags. Bring along a first aid kit in case your dog gets any bites, scrapes, or other injuries during the hike. You should have one for yourself anyway. After your hike, check your dog for fleas and ticks, as well as any critters, burrs, or other extras he might have brought back from his adventure. Dog parks. There's a dog park near my house that I was thinking of going to this weekend. Is it worth my time? Dog parks are a big wild card. While I'm happy they're available to dogs who do well in this setting, the cons to going to one can outweigh the pros for many dogs. The problem is that you often get a lot of dogs with too much energy in one place. Add to that the fact that many dogs are not immediately accepting of new dogs, and before you know it, you've got scuffles breaking out left and right. Also, too many people rely on dog parks for exercising and socializing their dogs. This is where most people go wrong. Your dog's primary exercise should be done with you, not with other dogs that he doesn't know. However, if you want to give the dog park experience a shot, first make sure that your dog is good with other dogs by introducing him to several other dogs in non-dog park situations. If this goes well, consider going to the dog park in off-peak hours. I really don't like to see groups of more than three or four dogs playing at a time, unless the dogs regularly play together and always get along. Also, I strongly advise exercising your dog before going to the dog park, so he'll be a little more subdued and relaxed. In my experience, lack of exercise is the most significant contributor to most fights between dogs. Monitor your dog closely, and if you notice him or other dogs getting too rambunctious, break up the play session. Service dogs. Recently, in a restaurant, I saw a woman with a dog wearing a service vest. What is that, and is it something I should get for my dog so he can come into restaurants with me too? Definitely not, unless you actually need a service dog. According to the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA, service animals are dogs trained to perform tasks for people with disabilities, such as guiding people who are blind, alerting people who are deaf, pulling a wheelchair, alerting and protecting a person who is having a seizure, reminding a person with a mental illness to take prescribed medications, calming a person with post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, during an anxiety attack, or performing other duties. The organization considers these dogs working animals, not pets. A person with one of these dogs can enter places the general public can go, even places where dogs are not normally allowed, such as restaurants, movie theaters, and hospitals. The problem is, it's very difficult to regulate which dogs are true service dogs and which ones aren't. The ADA stipulates that staff at, say, a restaurant, store, or doctor's office can only ask if the dog is a service animal required because of a disability and, if so, the nature of the animal's particular task or work. Many companies have sadly capitalized on such loose regulations. They'll send a certification and service vest over the internet to just about anybody, usually for a considerable fee. You may be wondering, what's the harm in faking it so that my dog can accompany me anywhere? Unfortunately, it really hurts those who do need such dogs. Legitimate service dogs are highly and specifically trained and have a certain temperament that makes them ideal for the job. However, many fake service dogs are not well trained and may behave badly. They might start barking in a restaurant or jumping on people, giving service dogs in general a bad rap. Every time illegitimate service dogs behave badly, the public is more likely to discriminate against legitimate service dogs, says Paul Mundell, CEO of Canine Companions for Independence. When a person with a disability relies on a highly trained assistance dog, being denied the right to access public places with their dog will ultimately limit that person's ability to lead an independent life. Bottom line, if you truly qualify for a service dog, by all means, look into getting one. Otherwise, don't take advantage of a service that's meant for people who really require it. Extracurricular activities. My dog is a bundle of energy, and I'd love to do some activities with him outside of basic training. Any suggestions? Basic training and tricks can certainly satisfy a lot of dogs, but then there are those dogs with so much energy that they constantly seem to be saying, "I'm not tired yet, let's do more." Luckily, today there are many recreational options for dogs that can fulfill any need, ranging from herding and tracking to dog surfing and sled dog racing. For instance, I began my dog training career by competing and performing in frisbee competitions, a really fun dog sport that requires a lot of creativity and originality. My high-energy dogs loved every minute of it. There are many opportunities out there, and you can find the right one for your dog no matter what his energy level is. Yes, even if he's a couch potato. Do a little research online or ask your veterinarian, local dog clubs, shelters, or other friends with dogs for options. There are no single governing bodies for most dog sports. Search for dedicated organizations and clubs in your area to learn more about what each activity has to offer. And be wary, when choosing one, unfortunately, you may encounter those who subscribe to outdated training styles. If these groups ever pressure you to use pain or discomfort to train your dog, keep searching. The advice in this book will get you much further when participating in the dog sports out there. Trust me, I've competed at the highest levels of dog frisbee and done lots of exhibition agility, fly ball, and other activities with my dogs over the years. Fun is key with dog sports. The following is a quick overview of some of the more popular activities you may want to consider. Check them out, you'll be amazed by some of the things dogs can do. Agility. In this sport, people direct their dogs through an obstacle course that can include maneuvers such as jumping hurdles, climbing up ramps, going through tunnels, and weaving in and out of poles. Teams are scored based on time and accuracy. Flyball. Teams of four dogs compete against each other in this relay race. The dogs jump hurdles over a 51-foot course, retrieve a ball from a spring-loaded box that they hit, and then return over the jumps. Flying disc competition. This one is near and dear to my heart. In this activity, commonly referred to as dog frisbee, a person throws a flying disc at various distances and/or in a choreographed sequence, ending up with the disc being caught by their dog. It can involve a lot of tricks, too. I love to incorporate the back stall and even play dead in some of the competitions I did with Venus. If you are active and creative and have a high-energy dog, you may want to get involved. Freestyle. So you think you can dance? Or you think maybe your dog can? Consider this type of competition in which a person and their dog perform choreographed routines set to music. Dock diving. This is a relatively new sport, also known as dock jumping. It's becoming increasingly popular. Basically, dogs jump off a dock, into the water, and compete for distance and height. Of course, your dog will have to be a very proficient swimmer to participate in this event. Therapy dogs. Whether or not your dog is the active type, if he's well-behaved and friendly to strangers, he may be perfect for what's known as animal-assisted therapy, not to be confused with service dogs. Dogs are trained to offer affection and comfort to people in hospitals, nursing homes, areas that have been affected by disaster, and schools, or to people with learning disabilities, for example. Research has shown that interacting with an animal can not only lift one's spirits and help reduce anxiety, but also lower blood pressure, improve cardiovascular health, and have positive effects on a person's mental and physical well-being in countless other ways. Conclusion. Dogs certainly can enrich our lives and make us better people. They are always there to comfort us, protect us, and do virtually anything we ask of them. And they teach us much more than we could ever teach them. This is the great treasure of the dog training revolution. In exchange for these gifts, all dogs ask for in return is that you provide for their basic needs, keep them safe, and give them a little understanding and lots of love. A game of fetch or tug of war is usually a hit too. I'm honored that you took the time to listen to this audiobook. The good news is that while I've explained how to teach your pet everything from basic skills and house training to really cool tricks, all of my advice will help strengthen your bond with your dog and bring you both to a place of mutual understanding. That close relationship, in turn, will allow you to earn your dog's respect rather than demanding it, and you'll be able to set your expectations much higher. This is the most powerful way to teach a dog, because the real magic happens when you transcend a step-by-step approach and connect with each other in a way that's organic. You now know not only how to teach your dog, but also how to care for her in every sense of the word from the first moment she enters your life. Before I met Venus, I never imagined that I could have such a rich, meaningful relationship with a dog built on a deep level of communication, trust, love, and understanding. My hope is that after listening to this book, you will have a relationship like that with your dog, too. Welcome to the Dog Training Revolution. This concludes the reading of Zach George's Dog Training Revolution, The Complete Guide to Raising the Perfect Pet with Love, by Zach George. Copyright 2016 by Zach George and Dina Rothport. This book was read by Zach George. This unabridged recording was published by arrangement with Writer's House, LLC, and was produced in 2016 by Blackstone Audio, Inc., which holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Audio, Inc. If you would like to obtain a monthly update telling you about new releases, call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-729-BOOK. 2665. For a complete listing of our titles, visit our website at www.downpour.com. Thank you.